Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Our mission is simple. We take complex stacks of articles, research, and technical documents, and we distill them down into the crucial functional knowledge you need to be thoroughly informed.
And today we're definitely undertaking a deep dive into a compound that's, well, it's shaking things up quite a bit, both in the performance world and increasingly in longevity circles.
Yeah, the buzz is almost deafening for this one. It's a research chemical known as SLU PP332.
That's the one.
And the hype is just massive. I mean, we're hearing claims that this is the next best thing, a real side effect-free exercise mimetic.
Right, and a foundational mitochondrial enhancer. The idea is it's designed to maximize fat burning, boost endurance.
And it supposedly does this by like fundamentally elevating your cardiovascular output, even if your lifestyle isn't exactly hitting the gym every day.
Precisely. But okay, before we get totally swept away by the hype and some frankly pretty impressive anecdotes, we need to ground ourselves in the actual science or what science we have.
Good point. So what is it technically?
SLU-PP332 is defined structurally as an estrogen receptor-related orphan receptor agonist. And specifically, it hits all three subtypes: alpha, beta, and gamma.
Okay, orphan receptor. That always suggests, that the body's natural key for that lock isn't immediately obvious. Signals complexity.
It really does. And our source material today reflects that complexity and its current status. We're pulling from a mix of things: highly technical scientific abstracts, mostly animal models, we should stress.
Right, very few human studies here.
Almost none publicly available. And we're combining that with extensive real-world anecdotal reports, dosing protocols being shared in the advanced performance communities.
So our goal here is to synthesize all of that. We want to extract the functional benefits people are reporting and dissect the mechanisms behind this exercise mimicry claim.
And critically, we need to tackle the biggest caveat in this whole discussion: this really bizarre thousand-fold dosing discrepancy between the lab studies and what people are actually using.
Yeah, that's crucial. By the end of this deep dive, you should be fully equipped to understand the potential here, but also the very real risks and unknowns.
All right, let's start digging into these powerful metabolic pathways.
Okay, let's do it. But first, this deep dive is brought to you by Infinity Peptide. That's infinitypeptide.com. Okay, let's unpack this core mechanism, because everything about SLU-PP332 seems to hinge on its targets. These ERR receptors, why are they so central to energy production, these estrogen receptor-related orphan receptors?
Well, it really comes down to where they are and what they do. The ERR, alpha, beta, and gamma receptors, they aren't just randomly scattered. They're highly concentrated in tissues that have the absolute highest demand for energy constantly.
Okay, liquid.
Think about the body's engines: skeletal muscle, obviously, the heart, the brain, the liver, and also adipose tissue, both white fat and, interestingly, brown fat, too.
So these receptors are basically master switches for the energy infrastructure in those key places.
That's a great way to put it. They're master control switches. So activating them, well, it's like flipping the main breaker to turn up the power output in all the most critical tissues at once.
Got it. Now, we have to talk about the name, because estrogen receptor related definitely sounds hormonal.
It does, and it causes a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
But the sources we looked at are extremely clear on this point. Even though the ERR receptors share some structural similarity with the classic estrogen receptors, like ER alpha and beta,
Yeah.
circulating estrogens, things like estradiol or estramea, they don't actually bind to these ERR receptors. They don't activate them.
Okay, that is a critical clarification because otherwise you'd assume major hormonal intervention.
Exactly. And the compound is not reported to have any estrogenic effects
Right.
or anti-estrogenic or really any hormonal side effects whatsoever. That's a huge plus if the goal is just pure localized metabolic enhancement without messing with your endocrine system.
Right, avoiding the downstream effects you see with other PEDs.
Precise.
So if it's not hormonal, then what happens when SLU-PP332 actually binds to these receptors? What's the specific action that kicks off this big energy boost?
The main mechanism is all about comprehensive mitochondrial upregulation. It focuses on two things: improving their function and increasing their number.
Okay.
So when these ERR receptors get activated, they target specific genes that control cellular energy production. It essentially improves how efficiently the mitochondria burn fuel, this mitochondrial respiration, and it also triggers the creation of new mitochondria, that's biogenesis.
That sounds incredibly similar to how PPARs work, the ones targeted by drugs like cardarine for fat burning.
You've hit a really critical connection there. The function is definitely analogous to how PPARs work, particularly the PPAR delta subtype.
Right.
PPARs tend to focus more on kicking off fatty acid oxidation, getting the fat burning started. ERs seem to be more about integrating the whole energy network, linking up glucose use, fat use, and the mitochondrial function itself.
And the sources actually suggest using them together, right, a synergy.
Yes, exactly. Both anecdotal reports and sort of the theoretical understanding suggest that stacking an ERR agonist like SLU-PP332 with a PPAR agonist like cardarine could give you a really nice complementary effect.
How so?
Well, you're essentially hitting parallel but distinct metabolic pathways. You're pushing multiple buttons that regulate energy output. The idea is you maximize fat loss and endurance potential by stimulating both systems.
Okay, now here's where it gets really wild and where that exercise mimetic term comes from. How does this chemical actually mimic the genetic changes of a long workout, but without the person moving?
Right. This is the core claim. It activates the specific ERR alpha-dependent genes that are normally switched on by acute aerobic exercise. And it does this effectively even when the subject is completely sedentary.
And there's proof of this.
The proof came from those initial animal models. They took mice, treated them with SLU-PP332, kept them sedentary, and compared them to untreated sedentary mice. The treated mice were able to run 70% longer and 45% further.
Wow, 70% longer endurance just from the compound. No extra training.
None. That's pretty much the definition of a pharmaceutical performance enhancer. Achieving that shift purely through internal metabolic changes.
So what genes is it actually tweaking inside the muscle cells to cause this?
The sources identify two key gene targets that see a big jump in expression. The first one is DDIT4. That stands for DNA damage inducible transcript 4.
Okay, DDIT4, that's a mouthful. What does it actually do in plain English?
Think of DDIT4 as kind of like the cell's nutrient stress sensor. When you exercise hard, you create temporary low oxygen conditions, metabolic stress.
Right.
DDIT4 senses this stress and kicks off the long-term adaptations the muscle needs to cope better next time. It's crucial for exercise adaptation, for improving mitochondrial respiration in skeletal muscle.
So SLU-PP332 is basically triggering the muscle to think it's under intense stress, forcing it to adapt, even if you're just sitting there.
Exactly. That's the magic of the mimetic effect. It's like sending a false alarm, but a beneficial one telling the cell, adapt now.
Okay, that's fascinating. What was the second key gene?
The second one is SLC25A25. This gene codes for a transporter protein located in the inner mitochondrial membrane.
So inside the power plant itself.
Right. You can think of it as like a traffic controller inside the mitochondria, regulating the flow of fuel components needed to keep respiration going. Upregulating SLC25A25 means the mitochondria can handle more fuel faster,
making the whole system run more efficiently, designed for endurance. What were the numbers on how much these gene expressions actually increased?
Okay, so in a completely sedentary state, just giving the compound, the expression of DDIT4 and SLC25A25 went up about 3.5 to 4 times compared to placebo.
Pretty significant.
But here's the kicker, the really crucial piece for anyone thinking about using this.
Yeah.
When they combine the compound with actual aerobic exercise.
Yeah.
That expression didn't just add up, it multiplied. It went up 11 times compared to the control group doing exercise without the compound.
11 times. Okay, that basically dictates how you'd want to use it right there.
Absolutely. It shows that while it does work as a mimetic, on its own at rest, exercise itself naturally boosts ERR alpha and gamma expression by maybe 1.5 to 2 times. SLU-PP332 just dramatically amplifies that natural signal.
So the conclusion is pretty clear.
Undeniable. For the maximum benefit, the biggest genetic adaptation, you want this compound to be active during your workout or activity.
Mm-hmm.
You take it pre-workout, it essentially makes every training session more effective at a deep metabolic level. #3more. Performance and metabolic benefits. All right, so we've laid out the mechanism boosting mitochondria, tweaking those exercise genes. Now let's look at the actual measurable results people see, starting with how the body uses fuel.
Right, this idea that it forces the body off carbs and onto fat, even when you're not doing anything.
Correct. And we can measure that shift using something called the respiratory exchange ratio, the RER.
Okay.
The RER basically compares the CO2 you breathe out to the O2 you breathe in. An RER close to 1.0 means you're burning mostly carbs. An RER down near 0.7 means you're burning almost pure fat.
So what do the sources show happens to RER with SLU-PP332?
It significantly decreases the RER, and at the same time, it increases resting energy expenditure, or REE, how many calories you burn just sitting around.
Mm.
That drop in RER is the real functional proof of the exercise mimetic effect.
Meaning?
Meaning, without you having to do anything, your metabolism shifts to using fat as its main fuel source. It mimics the metabolic state you normally only get into during long, slow endurance exercise.
So you're basically pushing the body into fat-burning mode 24/7. Do we have specific numbers on that fuel shift?
Yeah, the data suggests it increases fatty acid oxidation fat burning by about 25%.
Mm.
And importantly, it simultaneously decreases carbohydrate use in skeletal muscle when you're at rest.
Okay, you can see why it's becoming a big deal in cutting cycles then. It accelerates fat burning regardless of activity level.
Exactly. It's hitting that fundamental fuel choice.
And the anecdotal reports seem to really back this up, especially the strength and endurance ones. Can we revisit those?
Yeah, some of the reports are quite remarkable, often showing results that kind of defy normal training expectations.
Yes.
Like that user who reported a really quick jump in bench press strength.
Right, the 335 example.
Yeah, this person was clearly well-trained, likely plateaued.
Yeah.
They went from benching 335 pounds for 4 clean reps 1 week to hitting 5 clean reps the very next week while using this.
That's a fast jump for an advanced lifter, especially if they're supposed to be cutting in a deficit.
It really speaks to the compound's ability to maybe override some of those less than ideal conditions. And that same user also mentioned, quote, "My wind cardio has never been better."
Interesting.
And they admitted their lifestyle was messy, like 4 hours of sleep, missed meals, high stress. It suggests the compound is potent enough to potentially mitigate some of that metabolic drag from lifestyle factors.
That ability to maintain function under stress is huge. And you mentioned a connection to longevity metrics too?
Yes, specifically markers of physical robustness. SAU PP332 was shown to increase grip strength.
And grip strength is a big one, right?
It's consistently flagged as one of the best simple indicators of overall physical health, muscle integrity, and even predicts longevity. So seeing an increase there suggests the benefits aren't just aerobic. The mitochondrial improvements might be boosting overall physical resilience and muscle quality.
Okay, let's shift gears to metabolic health, specifically glucose and insulin. This seemed really promising, potentially huge benefits beyond just fitness.
This is where the application really broadens out, I think. SLU PP332 significantly increases the uptake and use of glucose by skeletal muscle.
Right.
It basically makes your muscles extra hungry for sugar.
Right.
And the result is drastically improved insulin sensitivity and glucose tolerance. The animal model showed glucose tolerance improving by around 40%.
40%, that's massive.
Yep.
For someone maybe managing prediabetes or just trying to optimize their blood sugar, that's potentially a game changer.
It really is. And alongside that, fasting insulin levels dropped by 25 to 30% in those models.
So how does that work? Why does making muscles take up more sugar help so much?
By making the muscles the primary place glucose goes, you help stabilize blood sugar levels overall. You're reducing the burden on the pancreas to produce insulin, and you're fighting off the insulin resistance that often develops with higher body fat or just with aging.
So it's this unique combo. Burning more fat at rest and handling carbs better makes it a powerful tool for overall metabolic health.
Exactly. It's hitting both sides of the energy equation.
And the sources hinted at this kind of cheat code potential too, for when diet slips.
Yeah, the high-fat diet studies were really telling. In those animal models, even when they were constantly fed a junk food diet, the compound significantly reduced how much fat they gained and kept their glucose tolerance good.
So the interpretation there is?
The interpretation is that SLU PP332 might actively help prevent fat storage and the metabolic mess that comes with it, even during times when you're eating poorly, you know, like over the holidays or a planned cheat meal period.
Which is why people are talking about it for a holiday stack.
Exactly. It could potentially keep those metabolic pathways open and functional, even under dietary stress. #tag AlpiVVice.
Broader health and longevity implications.
Okay, so it starts as this exercise mimetic, maybe a cutting aid, but the sources really quickly pivot into much bigger territory, broader structural health.
The heart protection aspect seems huge, especially for, you know, the kind of users we're talking about.
Yeah, this really elevates SLU PP332 beyond just a fat burner. It positions it more as a potential foundational health compound. And you're right, it's particularly relevant because we know that long-term use of some performance enhancers, think high-dose steroids or even sustained growth hormone use, can put cumulative stress on the heart, sometimes leading to negative structural changes.
So how exactly does SLU PP332 seem to protect the heart?
Well, they tested it in a pretty severe heart failure model in animals. It's called the transverse aortic constriction model, basically simulating high blood pressure damage. And the compound showed it could actually help repair the heart muscle.
Repair how?
It improved the ejection fraction. That's the percentage of blood the heart pumps out, with each beat improving. That is like the gold standard for measuring cardiac recovery.
Okay.
And maybe even more importantly, it significantly decreased cardiac fibrosis. That's the buildup of stiff, scar-like tissue in the heart muscle.
Right, and that fibrosis is bad because it makes the heart less flexible, less efficient at pumping.
Exactly. Yeah. So by boosting mitochondrial function right there in the heart muscle cells, SLUPP332 seems to help maintain the tissue's integrity and function even under stress. And crucially, the study showed it significantly increased the survival rate of these animals with heart failure.
Wow. So we're talking real structural and functional protection, a way to potentially mitigate some long-term risks associated with high-performance lifestyle.
That seems to be the potential, yes.
Now, the sources mention a related compound, too, SLUPP9-2. Said it might be even better for the heart. What's the difference?
Right, so SLUPP332, as we said, hits all three ERR receptors, alpha, beta, gamma. It's a panagonist. SLUPP915 is also an ERR agonist, but the speculation, the theory, is that it might be more specific or maybe more potent for a particular receptor subtype that's especially important in heart tissue.
So potentially a more targeted heart benefit?
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
It represents that sort of ongoing refinement you see with these research chemicals. But the sources also indicate that SLUPP915 is currently quite hard to find, difficult to source reliably.
Okay, so SLUPP332 is the more accessible option right now that still seems to offer significant cardiac support.
That seems to be the practical reality, yes.
Okay, let's pivot to another area where aging often takes a toll, the kidneys. How does boosting mitochondria help kidney function?
Well, similar to the heart, the kidneys are incredibly metabolically active organs. Their filtering function relies heavily on robust mitochondrial energy production. And just like elsewhere, mitochondrial function tends to decline with age, which directly impacts the kidney's ability to filter waste effectively.
And SLUPP332 showed it could help reverse this.
In mice, yes. It showed the capacity to reverse age-related kidney decline.
What were the specific markers that improved?
By improving mitochondrial function within the actual kidney cells, they saw several benefits. First, and maybe most importantly, a reduction in albuminuria.
Which is?
That's when albumin, a protein that should stay in the blood, starts leaking into the urine. It's a key sign of kidney injury and that the filtration barrier isn't working properly.
Got it. So less leakage is good. What else?
They also saw a reduction in kidney weight, which can sometimes indicate swelling or damage, and decreased inflammation within the kidney tissue itself. So it seems to be tackling decline at that fundamental cellular level.
And knowing the audience for this kind of deep dive, they're probably already thinking about stacking. What did the sources say about combining it for kidney health?
Yeah, users seem to recognize that kidney decline isn't just one thing. It's mitochondrial issues, but it's also often chronic inflammation.
Makes sense.
So the strategy reported is to stack SLUPP332 for the mitochondrial support alongside compounds known to help with kidney inflammation. The main one mentioned was astragalus root extract.
Astragalus, right, known for kidney support.
Exactly. Astragalus is thought to improve kidney filtration, partly by reducing inflammation. So the idea is you hit the inflammation with astragalus and you hit the energy machinery with SLUPP332.
A nice synergistic approach, trying to cover both bases.
Precisely. The goal is comprehensive improvement for better long-term kidney health, reflected in blood work. And there was that really interesting anecdote we found.
The kidney age reversal.
Yeah, one user specifically noted using SLUPP332 as part of a stack alongside other things like specialized peptides, Pilotax and SS31, and liver support like hepatamin, and they claim to achieve a documented reversal in their measured kidney age based on some specific test.
Wow, that takes it from theory to potentially measurable anti-aging outcomes. Okay, let's quickly summarize the expected impact on standard blood work panels.
Overall, the picture looks metabolically positive. SLUPP332 tends to lower serum total cholesterol, triglycerides, and fasting glucose and insulin levels. Interestingly, some sources also noted it might lower HDL slightly, which is usually considered good cholesterol, but the overall profile shift seems beneficial.
Okay, reflecting that improved metabolic efficiency and fat use. Any markers that typically go up, maybe indicating stress?
The main one is a potential slight elevation in serum liver enzymes, like ALT and AST.
Which isn't totally unexpected.
No, it's pretty common with many things taken orally, especially compounds metabolized by the liver. It's definitely something to monitor, but usually not seen as a major red flag at the doses being used, based on reports. Critically, it doesn't seem to negatively impact LDL, your blood count, or electrolytes.
Right. And what was that unexpected finding about adrenal hormones?
This was intriguing. SLUPP332 might increase the production of DHEA sulfate, or DHEA, in the adrenal cortex. It appears to do this by boosting the activity of a couple of specific enzymes involved in its synthesis, dihydroepiandrosterone, sulfotransferase, and something called SIP17A1 activity.
And DHEAS is important because
it's a really important precursor hormone for many sex hormones like testosterone and estrogen, and also neurosteroids. Its levels naturally decline quite significantly with age.
So SLUPP332 could potentially offer some unexpected support to the body's overall hormonal balance by helping the adrenals. That's a pretty powerful secondary benefit, if true.
Definitely adds another layer to its potential systemic effects, yeah.
Yeah.
#TechTechV. The dosing controversy and logistics. Okay, we spent a good chunk of time mapping out the really impressive potential here. Performance, heart, kidneys, longevity. Now we absolutely have to confront the elephant in the room, the huge kind of risky gray area that defines how this stuff is actually being used right now.
Right, the dosing. This is where things get really weird and, frankly, a bit concerning. We need to transition smoothly from the exciting science to the messy reality of the research chem world.
Exactly. We've seen the amazing results in those animal studies, but we have to acknowledge that those studies use doses that are just wildly different from what humans are using. It's created this bizarre split.
So let's start with what people are actually doing. Right. What's the dosage range in the fitness and performance community that's generating all this positive buzz?
It's incredibly low. We're talking micrograms. The standard effective dose reported seems to be around 200 micrograms per serving.
Per serving, okay. And how many servings a day?
Usually taken 2 or 3 times daily. So the total daily intake is typically somewhere between 200 micrograms and 600 micrograms. Occasionally, some users might push it up towards 800 micrograms total per day.
And people are reporting real noticeable effects, the stamina, the fat-burning shift at these tiny microgram levels.
That's what the anecdotes overwhelmingly suggest, yes. Pronounced, tangible effects at that level.
Okay, so why split it up? Why 2 or 3 times a day? Why not just take, say, 600 micrograms in the morning?
That comes down to the drug's pharmacokinetics, how it moves through the body. Specifically, its half-life, at least based on the typical research administration routes like intraperitoneal injection in animals.
And the half-life is short.
Shockingly short. It's reported to be only about 1.8 hours in the liver, maybe 1.5 hours in the blood serum, and critically, only about 1 hour in the target tissue, skeletal and cardiac muscle.
1 hour. Okay, yeah. That completely explains the multiple daily doses. You almost have to keep micro-dosing it just to maintain any meaningful level in the muscles.
Precisely. So the recommended protocol that's emerged directly reflects that. Dose maybe 30 to 60 minutes before activity, your fasted cardio, your weight session.
To catch that peak during training.
Exactly. And then potentially take another serving later in the day, maybe late afternoon or even before bed. That later dose is aimed at keeping that mitochondrial function and fat oxidation boosted during rest or sedentary periods.
All right, now let's get to the core of the controversy. The really big nugget for you listening, the thing that throws all the safety assumptions out the window, the 1000x discrepancy. Lay out the animal study doses again.
Okay, so those initial studies, the ones showing the huge 70% run increase, the heart protection, they use doses that, when you convert them, are staggering. The protocols range from 25 milligrams per kilogram of body weight up to 100 milligrams per kilogram daily, usually given via IP injection or sometimes orally.
Okay, 25 to 100 milligrams per kilo. Now, translate that using the standard conversion factors into a human equivalent dose, or HED. What does that look like for, say, a 100-kilo person about 220 pounds?
The numbers become absolutely astronomical. Using the standard HED calculators for that 100-kilogram person, the calculated equivalent dose would range from roughly 200 milligrams up to 800 milligrams per day.
Okay, let's just pause and repeat that slowly. The community is using 200 to 800 micrograms total per day. The calculated scientific HED, based on animal studies, is 200 to 800 milligrams per day.
Yes, we were talking about a factor of 1,000.
A 1,000x difference between the effective anecdotal dose and the calculated scientific dose.
Exactly. The converted HED is approximately 1,000 times higher than the dose range where users are currently reporting significant benefits.
So, wait a minute. This means we're basically flying blind, relying entirely on anecdotes from the performance community, right? Because that official HED is presumably way too expensive and potentially too risky for anyone to actually try.
That's the crux of it. You've hit the critical point that applies to using any research chemical without human trials.
Does it mean we have absolutely zero safety data on what happens at that calculated milligram dose in humans?
Pretty much. The practical reality is that milligram dose, derived from the animal conversions, is likely prohibitively expensive. It would probably cost thousands of dollars for a single cycle, and almost certainly hasn't been attempted by any significant number of human subjects, if any at all. We're navigating a massive information vacuum here.
So how do we even begin to make sense of this? Why would humans be getting such profound effects at 11,000th of the dose that seem necessary in mice? Are human receptors just that much more sensitive?
That's the million-dollar question. And there are a few theories floating around to try and explain this huge discrepancy. One idea revolves around receptor saturation versus signaling threshold.
Okay, what does that mean?
The animal studies might have been designed to achieve maximum possible saturation of the ERR receptors in the tissues, needing that super high dose to guarantee it. But maybe human users only need to activate a relatively small fraction of the available receptors, just enough to cross the biological threshold needed to kickstart those beneficial downstream effects, like boosting DDIT4.
So you just need to turn the key in the ignition. You don't need to flood the engine.
That's a good analogy, yeah.
Yeah.
Just enough signal to get the cascade going. Another theory involves bioavailability and metabolism. The way the compound was given in animal studies, like IP injection, might lead to very rapid breakdown or clearance pathways that are different in humans. Maybe the way humans are taking it, often orally or sublingually with the microgram dose, leads to a different metabolic profile. Perhaps it creates highly active metabolites that are more efficient or last longer than the parent compound measured in those short half-life studies.
That makes sense too. We're dealing with an empirical dose discovered through trial and error, not one derived from rigorous clinical testing. So, given all this uncertainty, what does it mean for how long people are running cycles?
Well, they're largely basing it on the animal data, again, specifically the duration of the studies that reported minimal adverse effects. Those typically ran for up to about 8 weeks.
So people are generally sticking to 8-week cycles.
That seems to be the common practice based on the limited scientific data available. Run it for up to 8 weeks, then take a significant break. But the emphasis really has to remain on extreme caution because of the total lack of long-term human data. #tag #strabblasterkind. Stacking strategies and real-world reports.
Okay, we've covered the mechanism, the benefits, and the huge dosing question mark. Let's look at how SLU-PP332 is actually being put to use in the real world. What's its main role in people's protocols?
The primary use case, overwhelmingly, is during a cutting phase, aiming for fat loss. The whole strategy revolves around maximizing that increased fatty acid oxidation and the improved glucose uptake we talked about.
Right.
And the dominant approach seems to be leveraging that low effective microgram dose of SLU-PP332, but combining it, stacking it, with a range of other fat-burning compounds. The key is often keeping the doses of those other agents low as well.
Why low doses across the board?
To minimize the potential side effects from any single compound,
right,
while still getting a powerful combined metabolic effect from hitting multiple pathways simultaneously.
Makes sense. Okay, can you detail some of the specific stacking combinations people are reporting? Let's start with stacks aimed at boosting mitochondrial function and overall performance.
Sure. For that goal, maximizing mitochondrial output and performance users are commonly stacking SLU-PP332 in that 200 to 600 microgram per day range with a few key synergistic agents.
Like what?
They might add methylene blue, typically in low doses like 3 to 10 milligrams.
Methylene blue, how does that fit in?
Methylene blue acts as an alternative electron carrier in the mitochondria. It can basically help bypass bottlenecks in the electron transport chain, directly boosting the efficiency of energy production.
Okay, interesting. What else?
Injectable L-carnitine is very common, often around 500 milligrams. The rationale there is to ensure that the fatty acids being liberated by SLU-PP332 and other agents can actually get transported into the mitochondria efficiently to be burned. Carnitine is the shuttle bus.
Got it. Need the fuel delivery system.
Exactly. And then, as we mentioned earlier, carterine, GW511516, is often included, made 10 to 20 milligrams a day, to provide that parallel PPAR delta activation, further stimulating fat oxidation pathways.
Okay, that's a pretty comprehensive stack hitting energy production from multiple angles. But what about users pushing for really extreme fat loss, like getting down into single-digit body fat percentages? They often need something stronger, right?
Absolutely. When body fat gets that low, the body fights hard to hold on to the remaining stores.
Mm-hmm.
So they might bring in more advanced fat mobilization agents. One mentioned specifically is 5-amino-1-MQ.
5-amino-1-MQ, What's the mechanism there?
5-amino-1-MQ works by inhibiting an enzyme called nicotinamide N-methyltransferase, or NMMT.
NMMT?
Yeah, NMMT is found in high levels in fat cells, and it basically acts like a brake on fat burning. It uses up NAD plus food, which is crucial for metabolism. By inhibiting NMMT, 5-amino-1-MQ helps keep NAD plus levels high, specifically within the fat tissue,
forcing the fat cell to release energy more readily.
That's the idea. So you combine that targeted fat cell effect with the systemic metabolic drive from SLUPP332 and potentially GLP-1 agonists like tirzepatide or retatrutide for appetite control and further metabolic effects, and you create a very potent fat loss environment.
And often people add things that stimulate the nervous system too.
Yes. For that final push, adrenergic activation is common. This means compounds that trigger beta-2 or beta-3 adrenergic receptors. Things like mirabegron, usually around 50 milligrams, which hits beta-3 primarily in fat tissue, or low doses of clenbuterol, starting maybe around 20 micrograms, hitting beta-2 for energy and fat mobilization.
And growth hormone is often in the mix too.
Almost always in these advanced protocols, yes. Growth hormone dosage can vary wildly depending on goals, from maybe 1-2 IUs for general support up to 18 IUs per day, or even more in very advanced bodybuilding contexts, though that comes with significant risks.
Okay, that really shows how SLUPP332 can be a versatile foundation piece in complex stacks. Let's circle back to that preventative idea, the holiday stack. Can you detail that again?
Right. The holiday stack isn't about losing fat. It's about preventing gain during a period of planned overeating. The strategy is typically to run a slightly higher microgram dose of SLUPP332, maybe 600 to 800 micrograms a day, to keep those mitochondria firing and fat oxidation pathways open. They'd stack that with injectable carnitine again for fuel transport. But the key additions here are compounds designed to block calorie absorption in the first place.
The absorption inhibitors.
Exactly. This could be the pharmaceutical drug orlistat, which blocks dietary fat absorption in the gut. Or it could be natural options like Garcinia cambogia or white kidney bean extract, which are thought to partially block carbohydrate absorption.
So trying to stop the calories getting in.
Right. And then for the calories that do get absorbed, they often double down on maintaining insulin sensitivity by adding potent insulin sensitizers like berberine or metformin. The whole goal is damage control. Keep the metabolism running efficiently, high insulin sensitivity, high fat burning potential, despite the onslaught of excess calories, to minimize fat storage during that specific period.
Let's use that insulin sensitivity point to speculate a bit on its potential during an off-season or bulking phase. Insulin resistance is a major problem when pushing calories and growth compounds, right?
Absolutely. This is one of the most exciting theoretical applications, I think. When people run high-dose growth stacks, maybe lots of GH, super physiological insulin use, or even compounds like MK677 that strongly boost GH and appetite, they often run into rapid acute insulin resistance.
Which means the nutrients aren't getting into the muscles effectively.
Exactly. The muscles become resistant to insulin's signal, so glucose and amino acids don't get taken up efficiently. This can lead to spillover into fat storage, plus it blunts the actual muscle growth stimulus. It's often linked to things like high free fatty acids or inflammation.
So how could SLUPP332 help there?
Well, remember that pretty sensitive 40% improvement in glucose uptake and its effect on increasing fatty acid oxidation. By keeping the muscles highly sensitive to insulin and aggressively burning free fatty acids, SLUPP332 might act as a protective shield,
preventing the muscles from becoming insulin resistant in the first place.
That's the theory. It could potentially allow users to handle those high-calorie, high-growth environments for longer periods without the typical metabolic downsides, like excessive fat gain and runaway blood sugar. It could be a crucial ancillary compound for maximizing clean gains,
making it a strategic tool for growth phases, not just cutting. Okay, let's wrap this section with those real-world side effects and caveats. We mentioned the strength gains even with a messy lifestyle. What was the main reported side effect, the one that contradicted some animal data?
The most consistently reported side effect, though many see it as confirmation it's working, is thermogenesis, increased body heat. Users often report a noticeably higher basal body temperature and sweating profusely during workouts, much more than usual.
And that contradicts some early animal tests.
Yes, some initial animal models didn't show a significant temperature increase. But it's important to note, those tests were often done in thermoneutral environments, cages kept at a specific temperature where the animal doesn't need to actively regulate its own heat.
So in the real world, when you're moving around, that massive increase in metabolic rate just translates directly into heat production.
It certainly seems that way. It confirms a lot of energy is being turned over. The Other major caveat, and this one is a serious safety concern, relates to the risk of hypoglycemia, or low blood sugar.
Especially when stacked.
Yes. Particularly when users stack SLUPP332 with powerful prescription weight loss drugs, like the GLP-1 or GIP agonists. Think semaglutide, tirzepatide, retatrutide.
Why is that combo risky?
Because both classes of compounds strongly promote glucose uptake into tissues and lower blood sugar. SLUPP332 makes muscles hungry for sugar, and these injections also improve insulin sensitivity and slow digestion. The combined effect could potentially drive blood sugar down too far, too fast, leading to dangerous hypoglycemia. Users absolutely need to be aware of that interaction and monitor blood sugar closely if combining them. #TechTech07. Critical context and final thoughts. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here. The intricate mechanisms, the really profound potential benefits for mitochondria, heart, kidneys, metabolism, and the practical ways people are using SLUPP332, plus the stacks and caveats. It's absolutely vital, though, that we wrap this up by firmly anchoring all this information in its proper critical context.
Right, and the most important piece of context is still its official status.
Absolutely, number one point. SLUPP332 is, and it remains, a research chemical. That means we have extremely limited scientific evidence regarding its effects and safety specifically in humans.
No big clinical trials, no long-term safety data.
Exactly. What we've discussed today is a synthesis. It's piecing together data from animal studies, which may or may not translate, with high-level anecdotal reports from the performance enhancement community, which are uncontrolled and subject to bias.
So going back to the dosing, even though that calculated human equivalent dose is incredibly high, the sensible approach, given the lack of data and the positive anecdotes at low doses,
is to stick to the low effective microgram dose range.
Yeah.
That seems to be the only logical and, frankly, responsible approach based on the information currently available. Going significantly higher ventures into completely uncharted territory in humans.
And as always with research chemicals, the issue of quality and purity is paramount.
Cannot emphasize that enough. If someone were to consider experimenting with these compounds, independent third-party lab testing to verify that the product actually is what it claims to be and at the correct concentration is absolutely essential for harm reduction.
Okay, let's try to connect the dots one last time for the listener. We started this deep dive maybe thinking of SLUPP332 as just another exercise mimetic for cutting fat, but the sources revealed a much bigger, potentially more impactful story.
Yeah, I think the compound's greatest promise, if the early data holds up, isn't just fat burning. It's the comprehensive approach it seems to take towards foundational biological health.
How so?
By targeting those ERR receptors and boosting mitochondrial function systemically, it appears to offer functional benefits that go way beyond aesthetics. We're talking potential structural protection for the heart, improving ejection fraction, reducing fibrosis, reversing aspects of age-related kidney decline, providing robust metabolic resilience by improving insulin sensitivity and fuel handling.
So it's potentially a tool for promoting systemic, long-term cellular health and resilience, not just a short-term performance booster.
That seems to be the broader implication, yes. It really challenges our standard categories.
And that brings us nicely to our final provocative thought, something for you, the listener, to chew on after taking in all this information.
We spent a lot of time on this massive 1,000x discrepancy between the effective anecdotal dose in micrograms and the calculated HED from animal studies in milligrams. Mm. That huge gap is really a defining characteristic of this compound story right now.
Right. So here's the question. If science continues to progress, and maybe someday SLUPP332 or a similar ERR agonist is developed into a fully regulated pharmaceutical drug, perhaps for obesity or type 2 diabetes or even heart failure recovery.
Yeah.
How will our understanding of effective therapeutic dosing be forced to change? Will the official clinical trials feel obligated to start testing way up high in those potentially risky and unaffordable milligram ranges based on the animal HED conversions?
Or will they eventually be forced, perhaps by lack of efficacy or side effects at high doses, to dial it way back down, only to rediscover that the microgram range, the range validated empirically years earlier by the underground performance community, is actually where the optimal human therapeutic window lies.
Yeah.
It really makes you think, doesn't it, about the different paths knowledge takes, the slow, rigorous, regulated path versus the faster, riskier, but sometimes surprisingly insightful path of real-world anyone experimentation. Where does the most practical truth emerge first? Something to consider. ##innate. Outro.
Well, that was certainly a comprehensive deep dive into SLU-PP332. We've definitely covered its power as a mitochondrial exercise mimetic, its really significant potential for protecting vital organs like the heart and kidneys, and of course that absolutely mind-bending controversy around the microgram versus milligram dosing.
Yeah, we sincerely hope this detailed breakdown gives you a much clearer, more nuanced, and definitely critical understanding, both of the profound potential benefits being reported and also the very necessary caution that needs to surround any research compound like this.
And remember, this deep dive was brought to you by Infinity Peptide. You can find them at infinitypeptide.com.
Thanks so much for joining us for this essential discussion today.
Fair.